high drop for Jackie Elka.
Goal! Oh, what a goal! What a goal! Yes! Unbelievable finish to the
Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another podcast where we've got loads to get through, and as the games are coming thick and fast, of course. We're going to start off by looking back on our, let's say, edgy win over Rotherham. We just about got through in the FA Cup after extra time. We'll be looking back on that in the extra time segment. And then we'll be looking ahead to the next game against Wolves with a match preview. For all of this, I'm joined by Terry and Owen, and of course, Mike from the Unholy Trinity podcast. So a warm welcome back to Mike as well. And of course, three of these guys will be going up against each other in a three-way quiz where we're going to have a little bit of a different format. We're going to have a sort of Price is Right kind of format for the quiz. So all three of the lads are going to take part in that at the end. So stay tuned for that. But first of all, let's look back on our, yeah, let's say nervy performance against Rotherham, shall we? And welcome to the extra time segment for a game where we needed extra time to get through. It was a 2-1 win against Rotherham in the FA Cup third round. Not what we were hoping for, really, with the exception of the fact that we actually are in the hat. It was very, very difficult. We made hard work of this. I'm joined by Terry, Owen and Mike from the Unholy Trinity podcast. I'll start with you on this one, Mike. How did we make such hard work of this?
We started the game pretty well, didn't we? You know, we got an early goal and you think, okay, this is going to be a bit of a breeze, this. And I think maybe the players got into that mindset as well. You know, we look quite crisp and sharp, and you know, Gordon started the game quite well, looked lively, and he just thought, yeah, this is ours, this, you know. And it was almost as if they just became too relaxed. And we allowed Rotherham back into the game after about 15, 20 minutes, and they then made it a cup tie. And it was down to our sort of inability, in a way, to just move the game forward and score a couple more goals and capitalise on being the Premier League side. And we've seen it, haven't we? You know, we've seen it in years gone by. And we've said it a few times this season when players are brought in and given a chance and they're not particularly taking that chance, you know, so... We need a squad of players without sort of jumping too far forward that can compete. So when someone is out injured, suspended, or whatever it might be, those players can come in and it's like for like. The quality is not impacted. But yesterday it sort of showed again that we're lacking in certain areas and maybe the mindset of certain players who are on the fringes isn't quite right.
Yeah, certainly. Owen, I'll come to you because when as Mike's saying, there's a bit of an issues in certain areas from in terms of squad depth and the quality that we have maybe in the reserves who came in for this game. With regard to the midfield, Tom Davis and Andre Gomez had stinkers yesterday from what I witnessed. So it always comes down to, I'll have to ask Owen what he thought about that performance from the midfielders.
They were both pretty abject, I think. Decore came on and sort of... He won, well, he did win us the game, didn't he? Because he got us the goal and whatnot. Now, the pair of them in midfield were embarrassed all game, to be fair, I thought, because Rotherham's midfield, I said before the game in the preview show that Rotherham won't sort of come and surprise you, but they are a well-motivated group of players and they'll give her everything, and that's exactly what they did. So that just motivation and will and desire to be on the pitch and do well.
Them
two on the pitch, they've just made them look like idiots. I think we won the game and that's fine. We're through the next round, so that's the positive you take from it. But I think we'd be talking a lot longer about the performances of them two in the midfield if we hadn't got through yesterday, because it was as bad as they've ever been, especially Gomez, and this part of that game was just dreadful. But
shambles. Yeah,
we have to take the positives ultimately and say we're through in the next round, and it shows what an important player Abdoulaye Doucouré is for us getting on the
pitch. He has got a few bad performances here and there. He's been absolutely excellent this season. He's been a great addition to this team.
Yeah, I think we need more players like Doucouré, just that sort of engine room in midfield and just with natural sort of pace to get about the pitch. I just don't think any of them two in midfield have that. I think, obviously, Haaland is quite mobile, but the rest of them are just really just lack mobility.
Yeah, those two in particular, honestly, it was awful to watch. And I think for me, that's the should set the alarm bells ringing. Like we said, what Rotherham players said in the build-up to this game. They're a well-motivated bunch. Where's the motivation in these players? In Andre Gomes, in Tom Davis? Where's the motivation?
Rotherham knew that there was a huge quality gap, on paper at least, between the Everton team and them. So it's just hard work and just giving it everything. And it nearly paid off for them on another day. It would have. I think they were without Ladapo up front as well. Maybe if he was on the pitch, they would have found another moment. But we need to look at that performance in more detail rather than the fact that we'd won, because I think that there's some issues there.
Yes, some pretty serious issues. I think the issue for me is the motivation. I think I go on a bit about this, but I always question the motivation of some of our players when you saw some of these players raise the game when we had fans in the stadiums again for that December period. And since we've not been allowed fans in, we saw it at the West Ham game and we saw it here, where these players don't seem to be able to G themselves up for a game. And that's a real concern. These professional footballers, like, should have some element of motivation to go out and win a football match. It's what you're doing for a living.
I just feel like they got the early goal, Everton, Tosin scored, and then from then on in, I just think they thought they had the game won, and it never works out like that, especially against a team like Rotherham, who just rolled the sleeves up and give everything. So a learning curve on our part.
Certainly. Terry, what did you make of this? What could we have done better, really? I mean, is there an ability problem? There shouldn't be against the side of the league below. But
I don't know. It was bad all round, wasn't it? Like, usually you can point at the fringe players and go, they were terrible, and they were. But even first team players were awful. Like, I didn't think Keane and Godfrey, who have been really good this season, were very good either. Coleman was terrible. Dean and James Rodriguez, I'm a little bit reluctant to point the finger at them. They were both pretty bad, but they've been out for weeks and weeks and weeks. So they're coming back and they're getting some minutes under their belt. So it doesn't mean that, they weren't playing badly. They were, but they've at least got an excuse.
And in fairness, James did set up the winning goal with a good pass.
Well, that's James, isn't it? Like, he didn't have a good game. He still got, a massive contribution to the game. But I'm telling you, the substitutions are what changed the game, Rotherham's and ours, because Rotherham were taking off their players who were giving us the time. They took off Crooks, took off Olusunde,
he's a very, very good player.
Yeah, they started taking them players off towards the end. And I was like, what are they doing? They're taking off the players who are causing us the most issue. And then obviously we brought on Decore, as Owen touched on. It just looked like a school match where you brought on a lad from one of the older years and he was just a cut above everyone else. And we say this all the time when we play badly and win. If we don't have Carlo, we don't win that game, because the subs, I think, changed the game completely. So we're through to the next round. And I said last night that, well, all these, every time you win a trophy, there's always this story that they tell years later, like, oh, the worst round was the first one. We nearly went out to some lower league team, and we nearly did go out to this lower league team.
When we last won it in 95, I think we needed a replay to get past Bristol City.
But we need to be a lot better if we're going to do anything in this cup, because if Rotherham would have had more quality, if we were playing one of the better championship teams, we'd have lost yesterday. It was the exact scenario that the lads pointed to, that I was the same. Scored that first goal and I actually turned to missus and went, this is just a case of how many goals we're going to score here, because these don't look like they can live with us. We're well better. And then obviously fate went, oh yeah, saying that, you cheeky get. And then fired to a, it was absolutely dreadful for the rest of the game. So yeah, I don't know. We were lucky to get through, and a different opposition on the day, or a different manager in our dugout, and we would have easily been out the cup. again.
Yeah, definitely. I think Marco Silva loses that game without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, and off the Millwall, who could only put set pieces in the box. I mean, let's be realistic here and just we've lost them. We've lost. I've seen Evan lose that exact game 5 times in the last 10 years.
There you go. At least this is at least we come out on the right side. That's the real positive. And it was 2 well taken goals as well. Cenk Tosun scored one and scored another one that maybe should have counted. What would you take on the VAR decision?
If it's marginally offside, it's still offside.
Splay on air was offside, wasn't it? I have no problem with a marginal VAR decisions because you know they go in your favour as well. I mean, I do, but I've just accepted the reality that they're going to happen. But the annoying thing is that if we'd have been at their ground, it wouldn't have been any VAR. It's like Millwall scored an offside goal against us. Oh, sorry, there's no VAR. Exact same
handball the Millwall game. Oh, remember that.
Yeah, to turn the telly off so the referee didn't.
What? Why? Yeah, exactly. You know, the Millwall manager saying stop putting the handball on the screen. Like you shouldn't pick and choose what games have got. It's like saying, we're not having linesmen in some of these games because the pitch is too narrow. So we're just going to have a referee for one game in the third round. We're not going to have it with linesmen on the other. You can't have it mix and match, and you need to have it.
What also irritates me is that we didn't play well on the occasion, but we could still be in the League Cup if we had VAR. You know, Cavani elbowed Gary Mina in that game and should have been sent off. But there was no VAR in the League Cup, but there is in the FA Cup. How's that work?
But the VAR comes in the League Cup and the semi-final stage, I think. It's a mess. It's just stop picking and choosing.
It's a farce. Why are they doing it? Just level everything up. If you're going to do it in the cup competitions in the Premier League grounds, do that in the other cup. I think the problem, of course, is I think the FA Cup and the League Cup's operated by the EFL and the FA Cup's operated by Shahad of the FX. Like, they obviously have different stances on what they want to do, but it needs to be aligned to have some elements of fairness across, you know, across the board in English football. And
just inconsistent.
You know, I know some of these stadiums, like in the lower leagues, aren't equipped to have VAR, but you know, for an FA Cup, for the purpose of an FA Cup tie, you think the FA could, like, you know, even for a one-off occasion, fund something. But
my problem is with that, though, they're not going to put them in the lower league stadiums. They can't sort of get that sort of going. Just don't put them in the Premier League ones either. Then you can't just say Man United are home to Wren, so that game can have a VAR, but Luton versus Bristol City in the same round, they can't have it. It just goes back to this sort of double standard thing that is just all reeking around football at the moment. Not for a long time, but at the moment in particular.
Yeah, I think if anything, it's getting worse. The double standards in English football, it's just farcical. I mean, the amount of things that people are allowed, we have our game called off because City have a few COVID tests and then Villa have a ton of COVID tests but still have to play Liverpool.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Sorry, mate. I think it's unprecedented times, of course, in regards to the COVID side of things, but that's an easy thing to get right, really, isn't it? You know, in terms of the rules for two different competitions, and to be fair, the rules in the same competition because the Premier League do whatever they want as well. You know, it's easy to get it right, isn't it? You know, without going off script almost there, the City game, I was delighted they got called off. I didn't want our players mixing with the side. Which,
absolutely.
You know, but the point is then when you then see other teams being forced to play, you've had more positive tests. Go back to West Ham earlier in the season. Didn't they arrive at the ground? At one point, Moyes arrived and got told he had a positive test, him and a couple of players, and they had to leave the ground. But the game still went ahead. You know, it's not difficult to get this kind of thing consistent across the board, and that's where I think, you know, same with the VAR, 9 times out of 32 using VAR in the FA Cup, which is just ridiculous. You know, it's not difficult to have consistency. And then people can't moan about it. You know, I think the Tosun goal was onside anyway, because if you look at where he drew the line's wrong, you know, and it just doesn't make sense. In the picture that I saw, it was taken after it left Hammers' foot anyway. So it's just, you know, it doesn't make sense. And like you say, if we play, it is, we play a day ground with three, aren't we? And we wouldn't then probably, yeah, it wasn't a great performance. But in my eyes, we did enough to get through because that goal should have really stood it. I mean, it's all ifs and buts, but, you know, as you say, the call for consistency has been there for so long and it seems to be getting worse as opposed to getting better, that's for sure.
I think, for me, the problem is, I think the Premier League, FA, FL, whatever, all need to come out and have a COVID policy where, say, if up to 10 players and staff all together test positive and the game gets called off, if it's not reached that milestone, you find another way. But
there needs to be a common sort of a common ground of what constitutes the game going ahead, because it's the same with the VAR. Who decides that only the Premier League grounds can have it?
The VAR will decide, you know, the VAR will decide who it wants to win at the end of the day. Like, you know, whoever the VAR, if he doesn't fancy Everton, you know, getting through at the first attempt, you know, without extra time, they'll decide that. Because obviously Mike's made a good point there where it appears that the ball's already left Hammers' boot when Tosin's offside.
You can draw the lines up at all different points. It's either way, it's so close. If they're doing clear and obvious errors, and that's fine, but that isn't clear and obvious, really, is it? That's the sort of standard definition of what the VAR is.
Clear and obvious errors usually make us off paint to decide offside decisions.
Yeah.
But either way, we got through anyway. And I mean, was there any real, like, what would you say was the real positive? Who was the positive for Everton today? Yesterday, sorry. I forget what day it is, mate.
Evan, I'll go Yerry Mina when he came on. He put in some important blocks.
Yeah, Yerry Mina did too well.
I thought Robin Olsen did that quite well with their set pieces as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they put some set pieces in that you'd probably sweat on if Pickford went to catch it.
Or it was Marcus Silva's own or Martin.
Oh, thank God for that.
I'd probably say the same. Olsen was good. Mina was good. Mina's had quite a big turnaround in form since the start of the season. He's got back to his level now. Decore was good. And they didn't play well, but I'm glad to see James and Dean back in the Premier League games. We're going to need them, because when they're playing well, we're a different outfit. So I'd rather them play poorly in this game where we weren't punished and be better for the Premier League games, put it that way.
Yeah, certainly. And with that in mind, you know, it's a quick turnaround. I think, is it Tuesday we're playing Wolves or Wednesday?
Tuesday,
bloody hell. Like, you know, it's not much of a rest, but we're going to have to see what happens. But anyway, we'll leave this game at that. I mean, tough game. You know, we didn't make it easy for ourselves, but when do we ever make it easy for ourselves? We get through Everton 2 rather than 1. And welcome to the match preview segment for Everton versus Wolves on Tuesday, the 12th of January. Everton go into this on the back of a 2-1 win over Rotherham, which required extra time. We made heavy weather of that one, and it's a very quick turnaround for this next game. We've got Wolves coming up. Never an easy team to play against to start with. We'll start with Owen on this one. Owen, how do you feel going into this off the back of what we've just witnessed on Saturday?
I'd hope it doesn't have any bearing on the game on is it Tuesday?
Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah. So I see them as two different games. Rotherham was a sort of a gnarly FA Cup third round tie that it looked like 60% of the players didn't even want to be on the pitch, never mind sort of go through. We got through anyway. We have to forget about that and focus on the Wolves game, where we're gonna need to dig in and just try and grind up results out like we have been, because they're an awkward team to play against. They're not the most free-flowing in terms of sort of styles that we're talking about. So it's going to be another one where we try and get the first goal and see the game out. I feel we need to get back to just the way we have been playing before the West Ham game. And I feel like we can definitely win this one. It's a winnable game, but going to be a difficult game, and I feel like the key is the first goal.
Yeah, definitely, and against these guys, and definitely given the way we are as well, I think you have to score first here. Mike, how are you feeling about this one? Are you confident that we can turn things around?
I think pre West Ham, you know, it wasn't a game that I'd looked at and thought, you know, I don't see anything other than 3 points. To be honest, we were in such good form. The West Ham game is still a bit of a puzzle now as to how we didn't approach that game a bit differently and come away with the win. You know, we were so poor in that game. Obviously, the Rotherham game, like Owen said then, hopefully doesn't have any kind of bearing on things. You've got Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison to bring back in, which is a positive. But I'd be inclined to maybe go back to playing the four centre-halves across the back, to be honest, put Godfrey back at left-back. So, you know, Luca Dean's come back and played an hour. He had a bad injury. He's come back really quickly. We need to manage that correctly. We've got the pace of Adama Traore to look at as well. You know, Ben Godfrey, we know, is quick and can you know, deal with him better, I think, than probably Luca Dean can. And maybe
better than anyone on our team can.
100%. You know, Luca Dean, he shows yesterday he was rusty, which is totally understandable. You know, the kid, what we said before, Ola Sunday was going past him at will at times with that pace. So we struggled and we understand why. So maybe Holgate back in at right back, Godfrey back at left back, me and Akeem, two centre halves, and just try and play the way we were playing, you know, before the West Ham game. Again, like Owen was saying, first goal's pivotal. We can nick the first goal. I think we win the game. But these, you know, they're a good side. They're not the same side without Jimenez. Jimenez is always a real threat.
He always scores against us. He does.
You know, and obviously we wish him all the best in his recovery as well after what was a horrific injury. But you know, as I say, first goal, pivotal. If we can get that, then I expect us to get back to winning ways. To be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's always the way with Everton. I find we score first, we win. We don't win.
That's the truth for the majority of the Premier League games this season. I feel there's lots of games, especially with no fans being in attendance, that the tight games, and often a goal decides it. And you see lots of games that are sort of 0-0 on the hour, and it's that who blinks first and gets the winning goal. It's the way it is. I feel we have to sort of, I want a positive start to go out and get after them, and then get that goal and then see where we go from there.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens. Obviously, it's going to be an interesting fixture. I mean, Wolves are a very difficult team to play against, and they're really well defensively drilled, which is, like, I think that we always find it hard to break these kind of teams down. I think, Terry, how do you see us finding a way of breaking these down?
I don't know, to be honest. It's I don't think, you know, touching on what Mike said, I don't think we're going to go back to the four centre-backs across the back. I think it'll be really telling now who the centre-back partnership is, because I think Dean and Coleman will start. I think they're his first three full-backs. And Dean will be crucial if he can get that rust off him from the Rotherham game and get back into decent form. Dean and Richarlison down the left makes us a completely different outfit, and with James Rodriguez on the right, we've got our creative players back now. So we might see a case of, even though, you know, we're the away team, we have a lot more of the ball, we try and break Wolves down, they try and hit us on the break and do us on set pieces, the same way we were playing in December. They might do a version of that against us, but we saw at the beginning of the season, you know, when James and Dean and Richarlison are all on form, it's just like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel for Dominic Calvert-Lewin, the amount of chances they were making for him. I think that's the team we're going to go back to now. We're going to try and become this, you know, creative attacking team. And it's just about the individual defenders and defensive players sort of
doing
their jobs, yeah. Like, who he has at centre-back, like I said there, I don't know, because I think long-term, I think Godfrey and Keane, could be the partnership. But, you know what I mean? It demands selection, the way he came on and played, you know what I mean? He's been playing really well, and he played really well against Rotherham. So that'll be the most interesting thing. I don't think we're in any danger of not seeing these players if they're fit, the Deans, the Jameses. Obviously, we'll have Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin back. It's more a case of who plays in the other positions, who's going to play in midfield. I think it's pretty safe to say, I think personally, that it'll be Decore, Davies and Sigurdsson, because one of Davies and Gomez has got to play, and it's the minute it's still Davies, because I've not seen a drop-off in a player quite like Andre Gomez from being our most important midfielder 2 years ago when he was on loan to being a waste of time now. Doesn't do anything, doesn't create, doesn't tackle, doesn't, you know, just runs up to the opposition player and stands in front of them and doesn't block anything. So I think the team is pretty easy to predict, apart from a centre-back, personally.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm kind of on Mike's side to an extent. I'm not sure about the Coleman Holgate thing on one side, but I think Godfrey at left-back to stop Traore or one of their wingers who are very mercurial from getting any joy would be a very good move.
Possibly, or we could see, despite Yerimina playing well, we could see Godfrey at left centre back just to, like, stop that cutting, you know, to go with him. But I think teams who do this against Wolves, who change their team up to accommodate for Traore, they just move him to the other wing. We did it last year. We played two left backs in that awful game after lockdown. The first lockdown, we had Baines at left centre back and Luca Dean at, you know,
left wing back, yeah.
Whichever way round it was, I can't remember. But basically, two left backs on the pitch, and they just put Traore on the other side.
I refuse to believe that we weren't sort of in the pub and the eat out to help out scheme before that game, because we were abysmal. That was the worst performance of last season. It was dreadful. Don't think we left our own half.
I remember that really vividly, to be honest. But I don't know. I think it's one of them. I've seen Luca Dean get absolutely rinsed by Traore so regularly since they've both been playing in the same league. It's like, as good as Dean is going forward, I think he's not that good defensively, and we could be in trouble if he has a bad game.
Thing is, though, if you play Godfrey at left back, they'll just move Traore to the other side, knowing full well, because they're used to teams doing these little, you know, tweaks to their team to accommodate Traore, and all they'll do is go, right, then fair enough, and then we've got less creativity down the left. So what I'd do, what I expected to do, is play a back four, a normal back four with both full backs, and then whichever side Traore's on, if he's causing us a problem, Godfrey will either start at centre back, or if he doesn't, if he's rampaging down our left wing, you might see him come on, same way he did against Rotherham. Or if it's the other side, you might see Godfrey or even Holgate go down. If Traore's on the other side, you could see Coleman come off for one of the centre backs. I know Holgate's not quite the same as Godfrey, but you know he's a better defender, I think, than Coleman. So I think it's one of those in play changes that Carlo makes rather than from the start.
Would you say I can definitely still see Luca Dean starting the game, but I could see Holgate starting right back over Coleman, just because of the fact that we want to keep it tight in this game. We don't want to concede, and Holgate's been decent at right back. I'd feel more comfortable Holgate playing than Coleman in this one personally.
I would agree with that, Owen. For me, it's not just a case of Adama Traore these days. There's also like Pedro Neto, who's been excellent this season.
He's a really good player. He's a much better player than Traore.
Oh, he's a much better player, but obviously he's not got the speed and the strength of him, but he's a very gifted player. But they've got a threat on either side, so we need to be mindful either way. I just think Holgate or Godfrey at fullback would be a better defensively than Coleman.
He's a bit of a whinger, but Daniel Podence is a good player as well.
I think he's injured, Podence.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I'll just have a quick check. Yeah, he's out for a few weeks. He's not going to play, but it'll probably be Traore and Neto on the flanks.
Yeah, I mean, they've changed to a back four these days, Wolves, because of the fact that Jimenez is injured, Joss is no longer there, so need to get as many creative players on the pitch as possible, otherwise they'll just be really blunt. So I feel like there's a way of winning this game, but I wouldn't just sort of throw everything at it and let them hit us on the break, because I feel like we'll be...
That's how they like to play, I think.
Yeah, they're a counter-attacking team, so limiting their counter-attacking ability. I think Decore is really important in this one. In this one, to sort of win the ball when they're trying to transition it.
Yeah, definitely.
For me, the big thing for us is, like, I think they're very well defensively drilled. We've got to try and break this down. Do these players have it in them to find a way? I mean, we saw that they were capable of it earlier on in the season. Obviously, we're a bit more depleted, but what can say?
I'll take a different approach to this one because of the fact that if we sort of sit 10 yards deeper and let them have the ball, I feel like they'll really struggle to break us down in this one. And we've got the pace with sort of Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison on the break, even player Wobi or Hammers. We've got the ability on the break. I think it's just about, I feel like there's a lot more joy to be had for us counter-attacking them than it is for us to just knock the ball around and see if we can break them down. But I feel like they'll be really difficult to do that against because I just don't feel like the moment we've got that sort of confidence to do that to teams.
Yeah, I think for me, we're relying on some players who I don't personally think are professionally motivated. You know, your Gomez's, your Bernard's, your Tom Davis even. I know he's not on a fat wedge like the other ones, but he's still not giving enough for me. You know, we're relying on some of these players to turn up, whether it's from the start or off the bench, and I just don't trust some of them, like, to find the way. I think we need to get more. We do need to bring in a few more players, but I think we need to get the most out of what we've got. So what would you go with in the midfield, Owen?
Yeah, Davis and Decore. I'd play all us in here over Andre Gomez. So whoever's left, Davis and Decore.
Jerry, would you second that one? Davis, Decore is the sort of two defensive mids.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's just no case to be made for playing Andre Gomez alongside Decore. I think we might see Sigurdsson. It depends. But I've just had a thought then. We could have Iwobi on the right with Hammers. Yeah, I didn't think of that. So I think that might be more likely, but I don't know. He seems to like Sigurdsson deep, doesn't he? So I would have Davies, Decore and Hammers, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Hammers on the right with Sigurdsson in the middle and have Iwobi on the bench.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I think either way, going forward, I think our resources aren't too bad. We need more strength and physicality in that midfield is the concern. Apart from Decore and, of course, Alan, who's injured, we need more in that midfield.
We need Alan back and another one to be really a strong side because Alan's really good, big fan of his. And then
yeah, he's excellent.
Someone else, I don't know, whether that be a goal-scoring midfielder who can sort of push teams back and hassle them, or another defensive midfielder who can win the ball back and just allow the attacking players to thrive. We need something that worries teams, and on top of what we don't already have, which is Gomez doing his thing and Davis, who isn't really at the level.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, what would you go with for sort of lineup for this game?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's going to be Davis and Decore as the two. I'd be inclined to have Hammers. I wouldn't play Sigurdsson, but like you say, Carlos seems to like Sigurdsson. But I'd put Hammers as the 10 almost, with Iwobi on the right. And the two of them can interchange then, I think, quite nicely. You know, Iwobi can come in centrally. I think, you know, I know
on the right, he wasn't
great. Yeah, he wasn't great yesterday, Iwobi, but, you know, we all know he's had a nice upturn in his form. And I like what he does at Wobi. I like the way he comes inside. He's big and strong as well, you know. My bugbear with Sigurdsson, you know, and as much as he's had a bit of an upturn in his form as well, and I've said it on our podcast quite regularly, he tends to, you know, when he's pressing, he tends to, when the ball goes past him, he then slides in when the ball's gone. So as a sort of almost second line of defence behind Calvert-Lewin, he's not. I think Iwobi's got a bit more physicality, but he definitely has.
He grasps more than Rodriguez does.
Yeah, 100%. So you've got the option there of him and Hammers then obviously interchanging if needs be. Obviously, Calvert-Lewin will lead the line with Richarlison on the left-hand side. So it gives us the options as well. If we play Iwobi and Hammers, you've got the option to play a little bit more attacking if needs be, or like Owen said before, we could quite happily sit, you know, with that that back four and sit sort of 10 yards deeper and try and play on the counter as well.
Yeah. I think you throw Richarlison in there with those two, I think you could be flexible with all three of them in what position they take up.
Well, quite regularly, you see Richarlison go to the right, don't you? He'll move across.
Rodriguez on the left, or it will be on the left.
Of course, and it's good to have that kind of flexibility. The better sides do, you know, they all interchange. And like we were saying before about sort of Traore, and you know, if we try and go sort of like for like in terms of pace and power, he'll just sort of change sides. Well, we need to be like that. We need to sort of work out puzzles and traps that have been set as well. And having those sort of five up top, if you like, or sorry, those four in a diamond to interchanges would be helpful, I think, in this game.
Certainly. So yeah, interesting one, but you know, you can never gauge with this Everton side sometimes, but I'll just see it going. Predictions, guys.
1-1.
Mike?
I'm saying 1-0 Everton. I think we'll nick the goal and then we'll sit quite happily. I'll even going to say Iwobi will score the goal, I think.
Oh, what? Seri?
Probably go with 1-1 as well.
We've got 2-1-1s and I'm going to check on Mike. Yeah.
Predicted a win between us since the Brighton game, so I don't be surprised by that.
Fair play, yeah. Well, if you keep on doing that, we've won most of the games since then, so I'll be happy enough with that. But I'm going to use 2-1-1s, and I'm going to second Mike on that one. I'm going to go with a 1-0 win. Hopefully we low-block the shit out of them and, you know, we get over the line. But you never know. That seems how we got the results that way in December and it was working for us. We might as well try it again. Until we're fighting fit again. So I don't see why we shouldn't be taking that approach and hopefully getting the similar results to what we got throughout December. So, yeah, I'm going to go for a 1-0 win as well. Fingers crossed. A few listeners on the podcast. Of course, we're going to finish up with the quiz. Of course, we've got 3 other participants alongside me in this podcast, so we're going to have a bit of a different sort of quiz format. We're going for the sort of Price is Right. Look, Owen doesn't have a clue what the Price is Right is, so I'm going to explain that to him and probably the rest of them as well. So we're going to take that sort of approach to this one. Three players, and basically I'm going to name the set of figures, a statistic of sorts, and each contestant is going to have to guess the number closest to the actual number for each statistic, and whoever gets it right, whoever gets the closest wins the point, and we're going to go up to 5 on that. So we'll go with Mike first, and then we'll sort of work it in all. I'll go Mike, then Owen, then Terry. No way, it's going to be a difficult way of doing a coin toss in this format, but so we'll sort of, I'm just going to screw Terry over. We'll do the quiz that way. And so, yeah, basically the statistic that we are working on is Everton's all-time assists. And basically I've got a list of players here who've registered assists for Everton in the Premier League era. I'm going to just read out a few names and whoever gets the closest figure to the number of assists that player got, we'll get the points, and whoever gets to 5 first wins the quiz. So we'll start with you, Mike, and the player in question for you first is Thomas Gravesen. How many assists did Thomas Gravesen score for Everton? How many assists did he get for Everton?
I'm going to go with 17.
Owen? How many assists for Thomas Gravesen?
I don't think I ever seen this fella play live. Never mind to know how many assists he had. I'm going to go with 14.
14. Teddy?
I'm going to go with 20. I did see him play live, but I haven't got a clue.
Teddy, I can tell you, you definitely have seen him play live because he actually got exactly 20 assists and you've got the point, mate. So a very good start for you there, Teddy. You got the exact number. 20 assists for Thomas Gravesen, and it's 1.4 Terry McAllister. Very good start there, Terry. You got nearly that one. Seven. You got that one, so you can go first on this one, Terry. Next up, Gary Naismith. How many assists did Gary Naismith get for Everton, Terry?
Minus five. I'm going to go with 10.
10. Mike?
I'm going with 7.
7. Owen?
I wouldn't know who this fellow was if he punched me in the street. 8.
8. Terry, you've got it again. You've all desperately underestimated Scottish Roberto Carlos, I'll tell you that. He got 13 assists. So, Terry, it's 2-0 in Terry's favour. Terry, I'll let Terry go last again. It looks like it's the winning formula again for Terry. So, right, next up, Terry again, you're up first. The all-time Everton leading assist creator, Leighton Baines. How many did Leighton Baines get?
Should know this because it was probably like displayed at the end of last season, wasn't it? But I can't remember. I'm going to go with a guess at 40.
40. Owen?
41.
Scumbag.
I'm going with 53.
Well, Mike, Mike's definitely been reading up on the stats because you were very close. You got 54. And Mike's got a point.
Personal all-time favourite player, Leighton Baines. So we've got that one massively wrong. Wouldn't be very good, would
I? If you were asking me Evans' passing accuracy in the Sam Allardyce here, I'd have 5 out of 5 here. So
how many shots on target they got in each game? Zero, minus 2.
5-0.
But yeah, Leighton Baines has obviously got some of the best assist statistics in the whole Premier League. He's comfortably out in front with 54. Next up is successor Luca Dean. And on that one, Mike, you're up first, mate.
I'm going to say 24.
Owen?
17.
17. And Terry?
18.
18. Well, Terry... Well, Terry, I can tell you, you've scumbagged him the wrong way because Owen was the closest with 17. Luca Dean's got 15 assists so far in his Everton career. So everyone's got a point off on the board. 2 for Terry, 1 each for Owen and Mike.
Don't play him in my own game, Terry.
next up, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. How many assists has Dominic Calvert-Lewin got? Owen, you're up first, mate. You got that last one right.
9.
9. Mike?
I was going to say 9, so I'll go up to 10.
Go for 10. Terry? Everyone's just like, oh, what number does he wear on his back? It must be that number.
Yeah.
8.
8. Well, you scumbagger, he's done you no favours, guys, because Owen got it spot on. He's got 9 assists. Oh, no scumbagger, he's getting you nowhere. Owen, you're on 2, mate.
God, kidder.
Isn't it?
This is the equivalent of going away to Burnley and sitting back. It doesn't work.
Oh, is it low blocking the quicks? Oh, God. Tim Cahill, Owen. You're up first, mate. How many sisters Tim Cahill got?
21.
21. Terry?
No, is there ages? What am I going on about? 21.
So you've only got 21. Terry?
26.
26 and Mike?
I'm going to say 19.
19. He seems to be more known for his goals than his assists, but he's still registered a fair few. 28, so Terry, you're on 3, mate.
I knew it'd be high, because he was super creative, but he was always involved in goals, so it'd just be a lot of like...
And he was here for 8 years, so...
Little like, 4 yards, like, roll, you know, assists to the opposition.
To Yakubu
and all. Yeah, little layoffs and little, you know, pulling the ball back on the touchline and stuff.
Yeah. Right, so Terry, you're up again, Terry. Phil Neville, how many assists has Phil Neville got?
Minus 40.
Yeah. Ten. I mean, he was in the team for a while. He was in midfield for a while. I'm going to go with 10.
10. Owen?
12.
Mike?
13.
Scumbaggery has actually worked for you here, Mike. Phil Neville got 14 assists. And it's 2 for Mike, 2 for Owen, 3 for Terry. All to play for. And Mike, you're first for this one. Ross Barkley, how many assists did Ross Barkley get for Everton?
I'll go 15.
At 15. Owen?
22.
22. And Terry?
18.
18. I mean, that this doesn't actually count the time you assisted Johansson and calling the police. But you're actually perfect again, Terry. That's 18 assists for Ross Barkley and you're one away from the win.
Yes.
So Terry, your first match point. How many assists did Stephen Pienaar get for Everton?
Twenty-two.
Owen? 23. 23. And Mike?
27.
These are all well off, but Mike, you're by far the closest. Stephen Pienaar did very well. You got 35 assists. So, Mike, you're up to 3 now. Owen on 2, Terry on 4. Still Terry's match point, but you're going first on this one, Mike. How many assists did Kevin Morales get for Everton?
I'll say 23. 23.
Terry?
Say 25.
5. And Owen?
I'll say Ed Moore sending off than assists.
And how many assists and sending offs has he got?
I'll go 24.
24 assists. So that's 24, 25 and 23. That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Mike, you're the closest again with 23. But I've only got 20 assists.
Oh, they're going to go lower as well.
It's a match point. It's a joint match point here between Mike and Terry. And Mike, you get to go first.
Sucked Owen in there by leaving the one in between me and Mike, just so I knew he wouldn't be able to resist it. He was going to go lower.
setting the present traps. Oh, God. And Mike, for the match point, how many assists did Kevin Campbell get for Everton?
I'll say 12.
12. Owen?
14.
Terry?
15.
15. Kevin Campbell registered 10 assists, which means Mike, you're the winner of the quiz, mate.
Excellent.
Terry had 3 match points and he's pissed off the wall. And Mike's come
he's come up on the rails here. He's played the same way 3-0 up as he would have done 3-0 down.
Honestly, mentality of me is terrible, mate. I need shipping.
you need to get that sports psychologist that Allardyce hired for a bit of chat. But yeah, Mike, you're the winner of the quiz, mate. And in true quiz winner fashion, you get to choose the song, which chooses out at the end of the podcast. Mike, pick a favourite song, mate. Something to see us out at the end of this show.
We had a discussion last time. Remember when I said if I won, I'd pick the Coronation Street theme tune? I'm going to stick by that. Have a bit of Coronation Street just to see us out for today.
Coronation Street theme tune. I mean... I've heard many things to see us on the podcast, but Connie Dean June's on another level of like, I was never expecting that one.
Appeals to all ages, mate, you know, goes to the generations, Connie.
So it goes to the generations. Just like Evan Bee.
I said fucking we shall not be moved or something, didn't I?
Yeah, you said we shall not be moved. They're all together now.
And it was nowhere that any of them were real songs other than chants.
This is the best idea I've ever heard, like to finish a podcast with the Coronation Street theme tune. Like one of the quiz mice gets the nod, and he's given us the nod to go with Coronation.
I feel like he should be told and void.
Stop the literally when Teddy was like on four points before, we were going like stop the count.
Stop the count, yeah.
But anyway, Mike's the winner of the quiz, and he asked us to play Coronation Street theme tune at the end of the show, so we'll grant him his wish, and he'll get to listen to Corrie in a minute. So thank you guys for tuning in on the Toffee Blues, and we'll see you next time. See you later.